Hey everybody, it's been a very long time since I've made a video, probably maybe over a month or so, and like I'm terribly inconsistent with this as it is, but lately I've been coaching jiu-jitsu, like our fundamentals class, and then handling like what we call orientations, right? Which is where somebody who's new, they come in and you just kind of like show them the ropes, walk them through what we do for our warm-up, all that good stuff, right? And it's been like a lot, man. It's like I've been doing jiu-jitsu for about 6 years now. I started back in 2016, and the whole time that you're doing it, all you're really thinking about is getting good at it, right? And like trying to get good at certain moves, and you're like training with other people, so you're always aware of other people and like taking care of them, and like there's that camaraderie there, but you're not really thinking about them getting good at it, right? Like you notice that they are, but when you like kind of switch gears and go into this teaching role, it's a whole bunch of different variables that you have to consider, right? And you can't get like, you have to find a balance between, especially because I'm working with like mainly new folks, right? So it's got to be like a good balance between like making sure that they understand the point of why we're doing stuff, but not going too far down the rabbit hole with things, right? And then just like little things, like everybody that you train with on a regular basis at this point, like for me, when I'm going to the advanced classes, like everybody knows what the fuck a breakfall is. Everybody knows how to like take care of themselves when they're getting taken down and we're going through the technique, but a lot of new people don't. You know, they don't know what a breakfall even is. So it's like doing that, and you got to write up lesson plans for each of the stuff you're doing. And then you'll realize too that you'll teach things and you'll fuck it up when you're teaching it, right? And then you got to kind of like clean it up a little bit later and elaborate on things. Man, it's like there's my professor, I was just meeting with him the other day, but he was like kind of emphasizing how there's kind of like three different, I don't know. Well, I forget how he referred to them, but like three different concepts basically within jiu-jitsu, right? You have like your sport jiu-jitsu and your training and stuff like that. You have teaching jiu-jitsu, and then you have competition, right? So like there's three different things, and they all require like a really different mindset, I feel like. But I feel like they all kind of go hand in hand, right? Like if you're like on the competition end, I could use more experience there though, because I feel like it would make me a better teacher, if that makes sense. And I think they all kind of influence each other. So I don't know, just kind of trying to figure out the balance. Anyway, point is, it's been busy lately, right? So I have been like slacking on this stuff. I've still been following it, but it's been kind of nice, I'm not going to lie, to just like, I love doing this. I love preparing for the fights and stuff, but there was almost like it was nice just sitting back and watching the cards like unravel and not really having the, because I knew I was going to take some time away from doing this. Like I feel like announcing it wasn't a huge deal. Like, you know what I mean? Like I didn't have to be like, all right, I'm taking some time off. Like I didn't, but I knew that I was going to have like, when I got adjusted to this coaching thing, this was going to have to take a hit for now. Like I still have a full-time job. I'm doing the coaching on top of it. And I feel like I'm finally getting into a rhythm with my lesson plans and stuff though, and my schedule and everything, where I feel like I can finally put some time back into this channel and this podcast and stuff, and things have kind of balanced out. So the goal is to be more consistent from here on out, and I guess just like update better too when I'm going, you know what I mean, when I am busy and stuff like that. Like maybe I should have done that, but whatever. Anyway, moving on. So before we break down this card, I feel like we definitely have to talk about UFC 275, because it was a crazy card. And I mean, like I'm not going to read through all the results and everything, but you had some bangers on the prelims, right? You had some really good fights on the main card, and Jiří Prochazka versus Glover Teixeira was like a classic, like an instant classic. One of the best light heavyweight title fights undoubtedly in recent memory. And I think of all time, like it's gotta be top three, right? I think of Jones Gustafson, you know, DC Gustafson was a good fight too. Close fight. But I really think of Jones Gustafson. You know, like the rivalry was always there between John and DC. But I still think like this fight right here was more entertaining. There were more back and forth the way it ended, all that stuff. I think one of the greatest of all time, man. Like maybe the most entertaining fight in light heavyweight history. I mean, very good, very good. If you guys have other like notable mentions, let me know. But this has got to be up there. Like I said, both guys hurt each other so many different times, and then they got into these grappling transitions, and you saw Jiří would like work his way out of them. He was caught in a deep arm triangle at one point and rolled out of it, and man, it was just back and forth. And I mean, I really feel like Glover made a big mistake in the fifth and final round when he hurt Jiří and jumped on a guillotine. I know that he's hit them before and blah, blah, blah. But generally, guillotines, if they work, they come early in the fight when your opponent is dry. It's just not a high percentage move. You just don't see a lot of guys finish guillotines. And how many, and you know what you see a lot of? If you get a guy gets caught in standing guillotine where a guy can really engage his hips, right? I'm not saying you don't see guillotines off the back, but like, if you see a guy really engaging his hips when he's standing, mounted guillotines seem to be effective, but a guillotine from guard seems to be rare. And even when you do get it locked up, like you hear the announcers going, oh, he's got it, he's got it, and they slip out. Or they find a way to work their head out. It's just like not the highest percentage submission to go for in the UFC, and it's certainly not the time to go for it in the fifth round when you're both covered in blood and sweat. You know what I mean? Just a tactical mistake from Glover, despite, and you see that guys make mistakes and still get excited about the finishing stuff and the potential for it. Even somebody as seasoned as Glover, right? And then for Jiří to just like escape the way he did, get on top, and end up finishing Glover without the hooks in, essentially, right? Like sank that choke in from kind of like this turtle position. Man, it was just a beautiful performance. And it felt like Glover was winning the fight. It really did. Like, Jiří was having some great moments, landed some great shots and everything, but it felt to me like Glover was winning. I don't know. That's the impression I walked away with, and I think, if I remember correctly, the judges saw it that way going into the fifth round. So for Jiří to pick up the finish was huge. And he's a talented guy, man, and I think a lot of people were sleeping on Glover in this fight, but you got to realize if you can take a guy down and make it gritty, right, it's going to be a tough fight for them. And it's like Glover's style just translates so well to how old he is. Because he can still hurt you, right? Like, he still has power in his hands. You guys saw that he can box. He's always been pretty good at boxing and, like, close-range dirty boxing and stuff like that. But his specialty is really on the ground. And if he can get it there, he can, like, kind of control the pace of the fight and where he wants it to go, right? And just dominate those positions. And, you know, you saw Jiří fight, like, Dominic Reyes, who attempted to take mount on him and just kind of, like, Jiří escaped. Jiří was able to do that in this fight, but it took a lot more effort. I think people kind of thought that Jiří was just going to go out and walk through Glover on the feet if it stayed there, and they forget, like, Glover can kind of throw his hands around, man. Glover can do everything, right? And, I mean, Jiří Prochazka had a fucking beautiful performance. Like, when he was on, he hit Glover with some shots that Glover had no right staying conscious afterwards. Like, he was really teeing off on him at times, working the body well. And, you know, Glover's just a dog, man. And it's like, has an incredible chin of his own, right? Like, he just kept eating the shit and staying there. And then, you know, it was just a crazy fight. One of the best fights in recent memory. And then, oh man, there's a lot going on this card too. Like, Jake Matthews, right, had a beautiful performance on the feet. And who saw that coming against Fiallo? You kind of thought it was going to be a close fight. And if Jake went in there and, you know, he won, it would kind of be because he leaned on his grappling and everything. And that wasn't the case, man. He just fucking put on a clinic on the feet. And Andre Fiallo, I thought, was going to have a boxing advantage going into this. But Jake Matthews was just slipping and ripping, man, throwing leg kicks effectively and landing almost everything that he threw, it felt like. So, damn, he just outpointed Fiallo. There were some good fights on the prelims as well. Let's see. But some of the other, like, Jack De La Maddalena looked great against Ramazan Ameev. Yeah, man, got caught in that tight choke early. Just a great card, but, like, let's just keep working back down the card since I started all the way at the top with Jiří and Glover, right? Like, Valentina and Tyler Santos. I don't understand how the fuck judges are scoring these fights. And, you know, it used to be, I remember I've been watching, like, I've always just kind of gone back and, like, watched, like, film on things, right? Like, just to, like, see how I thought people would match up and, like, try to place, like, little bets on them and blah, 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 right? Like, before I started making this channel. That's what, like, led me to do it. And when you saw split decision, when you looked it up, right? Like, when you saw that in the record, you would go, okay, probably a close fight. That's not the case anymore. Like, and I'm not saying this was a close fight, this particular one, right? But it's like, you look at the scorecards and I don't understand the rounds that they were handing out. Like, I undoubtedly felt like, how can you give the first round to Valentina Shevchenko, right? How? I understand that she was the one engaging initially, but Tyler Santos dominated the position thereafter for 2 minutes and took her back, which is one of the most advantageous positions that you can be in the entire sport, right? If you were on somebody's back for 2 minutes, that outweighs cage control time to me, because you're so much closer to potentially finishing the fight and threatening with the submissions. And I understand that Valentina was throwing these. That does nothing. Valentina did nothing. Nothing in the first round that made me think she was going to be able to escape the back and get out of that position, right? Like, she gave you none of that confidence, really. So I don't understand how, when you're in a position for 2 minutes, which is a significant, unless Tyler Santos had gotten rocked earlier and Valentina hit her with some nice straight shots and had her backed up against the cage and hurt, and then Tyler took her down and then took her back and then kind of like was breathing from there and recovering. I don't know how you don't give this round to Tyler Santos. The attempted takedown, or whatever you want to call it, up against the cage for Valentina ultimately resulted poorly for her, right? It ultimately resulted with her getting her back taken for 2 minutes and having to fight off submissions. Who's the one defending there? It's certainly not Tyler Santos, right? Certainly not. And Tyler Santos was in a position, one of the most dominant positions in the sport, for 2 minutes. I don't understand how that round doesn't go to her, right? Because it kind of feels like cage work sometimes can be, I understand that you're pushing him up against the cage, but I don't know. There's not a ton going on there all the time. Like, if that could be like a deciding factor at the end, and if Valentina had successfully taken her down, maybe controlled position, maybe we have a different conversation, but that wasn't the case, right? Then Tyler definitely wins round two and three in my book. I don't understand how you can give her round three and not give her round one, right? I don't know. Valentina undoubtedly won rounds four and five. And if you don't want to talk about the significance of being on somebody's back for 2 minutes, if you want to give Valentina the first round because of her control up against the cage or whatever, I personally think you're fucking crazy. But more power. I don't like jumping on the this was a robbery thing, right? But what I'm not liking is how the scorecards aren't lining up, right? Like, let me pull them up and I'll read off how they were scored. Because again, like, the split decision stuff, whatever, this was a close fight. Like, it, but I really felt like Tyler won. I don't know how you, like, you'll see what you, let me just pull it up. Give me 1 sec. Okay. So, Howard Hughes, David Letheby, and Clemens Werner scored the fights. Right? Howard Hughes and David Letheby, both, David Letheby is the only one who I think got the scorecard right. He gave rounds 4 and 5 to Shevchenko, 10-9, and Tyler Santos rounds 1, 2, and 3, 10-9, right? He had Tyler Santos winning. Clemens Werner gave Valentina Shevchenko rounds 1, rounds 2, and then gave Tyler Santos round 3. To me, round 3 and 1 almost felt like a little more similar, right? Round 2 was definitely Tyler's, though. Like, nothing significant in that round happened other than Tyler taking control, undoubtedly. Like, I really felt like Tyler Santos won the second round, right? That's when everybody was saying, like, oh, she's up 2-0. Like, you maybe thought about the first, but the second you were like, okay, she's up on the scorecards right now. Or it's at least tied, at the very least. I don't know. But what I don't understand is how you give 1 and 2 to Valentina and you only give 3 to Tyler Santos. And then Howard Hughes gave round 1 to Tyler and then round 2 to Valentina. That one makes even less sense to me, because round 2 was the clearest of the rounds, right? So how'd you give round 1, which was way more debatable, to Tyler, and then give round 2 to Valentina when Tyler looked better in round 2 than she did in round 1? Like I said, round 1 and round 3 are a little bit closer. Like, I can understand some of the discrepancy there almost. But, like, how in the world? It's just the consistency. It's, like, the lack of consistency, right? I don't understand how if you score round 1 for Tyler, you score round 2 for Valentina. Because he gave round 3 to Tyler as well. That's the one that's, like, blowing my mind, right? And then to give Clemens Werner, when he gave round 2 to Valentina, What are they seeing? It's like they're all over the place to me. I really struggle with it. And I wonder how much these fucking people are being vetted when they watch stuff, and how you should have to write up a fucking justification after each of your fights where fighters are ranked at least or something, on why you scored the fight the way you did and how you saw it, because I'm not making sense of much of this at all, right? Like, I'm not getting how they're missing the second round. And I'm not getting... Is it because Valentina hit a hip toss? But her hip toss was immediately countered, right? Like, she just came out the... It's blowing my mind, guys. And I'm ranting about it, and I'm taking a lot of time, but... Holy fuck. Something has to change, right? Like, and then... Anyway, let's move on. Zhang Weili, I'm done. I just spent like time just literally sitting there bitching about it. But Zhang Weili knocked out Ioana Jędrzejczyk in like fantastic fashion, right? With that spinning back fist, and sent Ioana into retirement. And man, Ioana is one of the like pioneers, especially for the strawweight division. Like, you're starting, that transition has kind of changed recently to Rose, especially if you're newer to watching MMA. But man, if you were watching the strawweight division get built, Ioana was kind of the first person you looked at and thought, damn, if you watch like a silhouette of her, she kind of looks like a dude. Like the way that she threw her strikes and everything, and the crispness of her technique and just her movement and everything. Is like, she was one of the, in my opinion, the first people that really looked like that when she was throwing her strikes, right? Everything that she did was crisp. She had excellent takedown defense. She reminds you a lot of like Jose Aldo a little bit, right? Maybe obviously not the explosiveness and stuff, but like her ability to just keep the fight where she wanted it, stay on the feet, and just like put pressure on girls, right? Holloway-esque a little bit too, I feel like. They remind me a lot of each other. Not in the way they look when they throw their strikes, but in the way that they fight. And they apply like forward pressure, keep coming, and they break you, and they're very hard to get to the ground. And if you do get them there, they pop back up. That kind of fighter, right? So it was a shame to see her go out like that, but I do hope she just stays away. Like, when you're halfway out like that, even if she's been thinking about it, like, she's going to be able to do more stuff outside of fighting. So, like, don't keep going through it. Like, get out while you can. She's still young, still healthy. So, it's a shame. But, man, it just shows you what a talented, especially towards the top, what a talented division strawweight is, right? And Zhang Weili just proving again why she's such a bad motherfucker. She is fucking crazy, right? And she just dominated Ioana throughout the fight with her wrestling. And then, like, Ioana tried, like, it was a great fight, and Ioana, but Zhang Weili just always felt like she was a step ahead. And, like, every department, when she landed that, it was like, ooh, put her face down on the canvas, man. It was a great performance, but it's like that division in 145 for men, where you got Volkanovski and Holloway, too, right? Like, they're just, like, it feels like they're the two best, and they're clear above everybody else. That's kind of how 115 feels with Rose and Zhang Weili, right? Like, who's going to beat him right now? I don't know. Crazy. But anyway, let's move on to some, like, announcements I want to talk about. Zabit Magomedsharipov actually just announced his retirement. So, pretty crazy if you consider what a talented prospect he was. And then he just kind of did go radio silent. I don't know. Like, boom. Never heard anything from him, right? Like, didn't know really what was going on. Then you hear some rumors that he might want to go back and like get his medical degree, and now he comes out and retires. And I don't know. He says, I'm starting to see some stuff rolling now, and he says he's just like tired of it. You know, just sick of it. MMA Junkie has like an article on it, and he said he doesn't feel the same way that he used to. And if you're not passionate about it, man, and it's just not what you want to do, it's crazy that he can be so good at it and he just doesn't want to pursue it. You know what I mean? You don't hear that story very often. Like, I'm sure they exist. I'm sure you could find them. But most of the time, the people, like, pursuing this are in search of that. You know what I mean? And I don't know. To hear somebody who definitely had title aspirations say that it's just not his thing and retire when he was on the up and in the prime of his career and everything, likely, or, like, trending into it. Man, it's wild. But you got to do what fucking makes you happy. So good for him. I mean, get out and do what you want to do with life, man. Fuck, you know what I mean? Like, it just goes to show you, like, even people who do this religiously, like, every fucking day and have real potential for it, just sometimes are just like, it's not for them. I don't know. It's a weird case. But anyway, another big announcement, Aljamain Sterling versus TJ Dillashaw being finalized for UFC 279, which is going to take place on September 10th. I guess they're looking at locations in Boston or Atlanta for that. So that's a great fight. You know, and probably one of the bigger names for Aljamain. But I don't know. Aljamain also got that whole storyline behind him of, like, the illegal knee going for him going into the Jan rematch. So, like, I actually kind of think that did a lot for him in terms of just getting eyeballs on him and making people interested in the fight. I actually think that was a net gain for him, especially because he came out and won the way he did, you know? So, fuck. I don't know. Great fight, though. A big fight against Dillashaw, who's obviously a big name. And, again, you got the whole, like, you're going to have the whole story circulating there about the steroid use. That's never leaving TJ's career. You know what I mean? Like, that's never going away, and that whole storyline's always going to be there. So this is probably one of the better money fights that Sterling could have made. So, yeah, that's a big one. And there was one more that I wanted to talk about. Oh, Greg Hardy signing with a Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship, right? Pretty interesting that you're seeing a lot of these guys start to head over there. And I don't know. It seems like a pretty I don't like the way they've been setting stuff up, right? Like, the organization has already had a death. I think they try to push these bullshit fucking fights through to these commissions, and they find all these sleazy ways to get them approved, and the commission signing off on them or pushing back on the stuff, saying, like, oh, wait a minute. You know what? And they're going to, like, places where the laws are, like, you know, you can play fast and loose with them. Like, you're going to Florida and shit. And I know that, like, everybody praises Florida because, like, oh, it saved the UFC. And, like, not saved it, but, like, gave them a place to put on shows during COVID and stuff like that. And Dana was all like, oh, yeah. But the UFC is a well-regulated machine at this point. This Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship is, like, finding, like, they had to, the way they got around the gloves thing was, I think they made them wear the weight of the gloves on their wrists so that they could keep, like, you know what I mean? And it covered their hand but not their knuckle. It was very strange. I just don't like the way they go about making their matchups, all that shit. So more power to Hardy for going over there, but I'm personally not a big fucking fan of the organization and the way it's run and the matchups that they make. So anyway, let's move on to the card coming up this weekend, right? We got UFC on ESPN 37, Cater versus Emmett, and it's a great matchup at the top of the card. And I feel like the main card has some you know, honestly, the prelims have some good fights too. You got Cody Stamann versus Eddie Wineland kicking things off. That's the very first fight. Gloria De Paula versus Mario Oliveira. Danny Chavez versus Ricardo Ramos. Tony Kelly versus Adrian Yanez. That's a great fucking fight. Court McGee versus Jeremiah Wells. Jasmine Jezutavicius versus Natalie Silva. I still think I fucked both those names up. Natalia Silva. Phil Hawes versus Darren Wynn, and Kyle Daukaus versus Roman Delige. I butchered probably half those names, but that's a good fucking prelim card, right? We're going to focus on breaking down the main card, though, and it starts with Julian Marquez versus Gregory Rodriguez. This is an interesting fight because Gregory Rodriguez has been in good fights, but I feel like he's been in a lot of fights where he is able to, like, kind of assert his will on his opponent. Well, like, you know, like Jung Young Park, like when he went in and, like, got Jung Young Park to the ground, he was able to dominate him from there, right? Like, the first round ended with Gregory on his back, and it didn't feel like Park was able to offer up, like, any way to get back to his feet. And Park's, like, more of a striker, but you got to see that his takedown defense wasn't all that great, right? And that is, like, it wasn't just up to, like, Julian Marquez is going to be, he's very well tested in those departments, right? Like, if we go back and look at Julian Marquez's last couple fights, give me one sec. I'm trying to pull up my notes for this. Sam Alvey, second round rear naked choke, right? Knocked him out. Maki Patolo, though, right? Is the fight where you gotta, I just don't understand the odds on this one, right? So Julian Marquez is like a plus 170, but he has been in fucking dogfights. And I think people just look at Gregory Rodriguez, and don't get me wrong, guys. He throws hard fucking punches. He has good head movement. He finds home for that right hand. He mixes in his kicks and stuff once in a while. He has great fucking jiu-jitsu, good wrestling. He's a big, strong, tall, imposing guy. I understand. But you can't discount the fact that Julian Marquez has been in fucking dogfights. And that matters. This is a guy who won the Contender Series, got taken down by Phil Hawes, right? Dominated for the most part on the ground. Worked his way back to his feet, though, right? Took the fight to Hawes in the second round, right? Was on top of him. And then as he stood up, head kicked him and knocked him the fuck out, right? This is a guy who in his fight against Maki Pitolo, he ate some fucking bombs. Dealt with the same sort of takedown pressure over and over and over again and got back up. In the third round, came out fucking swinging and tapped him out with an anaconda. This is the same guy who beat up on Sam Alvey basically for two rounds before knocking him down and rear naked choking him, right? This is the same guy who has been in these fucking wars, right? And look at Gregory Rodriguez. It's like his fight against Park was sort of a war, but not the same kind of like drag it out slobber knocker like that he's been through with... that Julian Marquez has been through against some of his opponents, right? Like the Maki Pitolo fight was a war. And when Gregory Rodriguez lost to Armin Petrosian, he kept Petrosian on the back foot, but Petrosian just countered and used his like slick kickboxing leg kicks and like, you know, used his like kickboxing prowess to kind of get the win. The problem is that Gregory Rodriguez does very well when he's moving forward and when he's able to assert his will on you. What happens when you look at Julian Marquez, also, guys, like, the cardio for Marquez is going to be there. And he moves a lot. I'm not, like, trying to sell. I'm not saying that, like, Marquez couldn't win this fight. But it's like he's, like, a plus 170, maybe a plus 150 right now. I think this fight's much closer to even. I really do. I think that Julian Marquez is a big guy. I know that Rodriguez will have the reach advantage, but Marquez moves his feet a lot, and I think he's going to get ahead in the footwork battle. And what happens in those moments where Rodriguez isn't able, right, to push Marquez backwards? What happens when Marquez is moving more than him and cutting angles and keeping him on the back foot? What happens if he does take Marquez down and he's not able to control position the way he did against Park, right? Or the way he does against most of the guys that he gets on the ground? What happens when Marquez is never relenting position and fighting him every step of the way? What happens when he's making those takedown attempts dirty? What happens when he, like I said, if Marquez starts putting hands in his face, and it's not like Rodriguez doesn't have the power to just crack and, like, you know what I mean, change the pace of the fight himself. He can absolutely win this fight. I just think it's closer to even, and I think Marquez is going to edge out a win just because of the fucking the slobber knockers he's been in the UFC so far. I really do. I like Marquez in this fight. I think it goes the distance, but I think you're going to see Marquez's heart and will come out in this one, and just I think he's just going to take it to Rodriguez and put it on him in a way that people aren't expecting him to. I don't know. It's just what I get from watching the film on the dude. I think he's a dog. All right, so next fight is Demir Ismagulov versus Guram Kutatalaje. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I'm probably going to butcher some names, guys. But Demir Ismagulov is an interesting guy, and I think he probably has – I think I'm probably giving him this fight, right? Like, I think it's close, though. I think you're going to see that Guram is more of a kickboxer, and he's going to use a lot of kicks, whereas – Ismagulov will mix his kicks in, but he's much more willing to throw his hands. And kind of like we saw in the Cater versus Chikadze fight, obviously these two are going to look a lot different when they're actually in there fighting, right? Like, but just that same concept of it takes a lot of energy to throw kicks primarily. And I'm not saying that Guram doesn't have that kind of, like, cardio built up, but in a fight where it's like I feel like I go with the guy who throws his hands more, and I think Ismagulov is gonna just be like a little more willing to throw volume. And there's also the wrestling, right? And you got to see, though, especially in the fight against Gamrot, right, that Guram, when he gets there, when he gets there, his guard retention is very good. He's threatening with submissions. He's using things to get back to his feet and get it to where he wants to be, right? But I think that Ismagulov is just going to kind of be able to meet him at every turn. And Ismagulov is also, when he gets you to the ground, he has a little bit of a different approach than Gamrot. Like, Ismagulov will control your, he's controlling your ankles, like getting your feet up in the air, throwing pot shots to the belly, getting back out, then diving in. Like, he's very active and I think he works a little bit more effectively from the top position from an MMA perspective than a guy like Gamrot does. I think Gamrot's much more focused on control, and he doesn't quite have the striking arsenal that Ismagulov has, right, when he's not able to obtain that control. I think that Ismagulov is just going to present problems for Gurriev. I think it's a good fight. And I think it's going to be close, and I think that both guys are going to have their moments. But I think that Demir is just going to be able to be as, like, he's going to be able to meet everything that Gurriev offers and just stay a little bit ahead of him. And I think that'll wear on Gurriev by the time the third round rolls around. I like Demir Ismagulov by decision in this one. We'll see. Great fight, though. Great fight. Here's another fucking fight that I do not understand. Joaquin Buckley versus Albert Duraev. Obviously, Buckley has, like, a lot of that hype around him, right, because of the fucking spinning back kick that he landed against, was it Imbanaev, I think. But I can't understand how he's such a big underdog in this fucking fight. Albert Duraev has one UFC fight against Roman Kopylov, and Kopylov is now 0-2 in the UFC after his loss to Duraev, and he beat Kyle Bittencourt via first-round submission in the Contender Series. Joaquin Buckley has fought Kevin Holland, Alessio De Chirico, Antonio Arroyo, and Abdul Razak Al-Hassan, right? So the combined UFC experience for Albert Duraev's UFC opponents is 0-2. I don't even know what it is for Joaquin Buckley, but his fight in Kevin alone blows that Kevin Holland out of the alone blows that number out of the water. The experience thing matters so much, and I feel like people just look at these wrestlers and think, oh yeah, it is going to be difficult to get a guy like Buckley who is explosive and powerful to the ground. I really think so. Like, I understand that they have that and stuff, but I think that Buckley has a lot of experience accumulated in the UFC. He's fought a lot of tenured UFC opponents, and he's going to understand where his energy levels need to be. And he can fucking box. He does a great job of using his footwork, getting off the center line, throwing shots to the body, right? He has good boxing. And I think that his takedown defense is going to be there, especially early on, if he can, like, I don't know. I think the way Duraev would have to win this fight is by, like, wearing on Buckley, right? Over and over and over again. But I think that Buckley is going to be able, when he, I'm not, like, I think that there are going to be some failed attempts early on for Duraev, and he's going to have to constantly hunt after the wrestling throughout the entire fight in order to get Buckley down, right? And get him to where he can have a chance to win the fight. But I think that Buckley is going to present enough problems on the feet that the opposite is going to happen. I don't think Duraev's going to tire out Buckley. I think Buckley's going to tire out Duraev. I think Buckley's going to finish Duraev in this fight. I just think the experience, the way that Buckley's going to be able to pace himself, I think Duraev's going to probably come out and start hunting for the takedown relatively early and relatively hard. And when you're doing that against a strong, explosive guy who has a pretty firm understanding of what, it's sloppy sometimes, right? I'm not saying that. But I just think that as the fight wears on, Buckley's actually going to be able to start putting his boxing combinations together, and the effort that Duraev is going to have to put in and not having that, like, UFC experience, right? I think that's going to be a big factor in this fight. I think that the pacing and the control of the fight and the timing and stuff goes to Buckley, and I think he walks away with the win. I think he ends up finishing him late in the second or in the third round. We'll see. Maybe I'm way off on that one, but just, like, I don't understand the odds on that one at all. Like, you can't tell me that you know for sure that Duraev is that much better, that the odds deserve to be stacked that much in his favor, that Buckley's that big of a dog. I think this is a close fight, and I think Buckley walks away with it. We'll see. All right, next, Kevin Holland versus Tim Means. So this is an interesting one, and this is one where I do think the odds kind of are correct, though. I think Tim Means is a fucking dog, right? Like, you look at his fights against, like, Mike Perry, man, like, the way he was working the jab. He mixes his elbows in there. He's fucking strong in the clinch. You saw that a lot in his fight against Dalby, right? Like, he does a lot of things really well, but I just think that he's going to hit a guy in Kevin Holland who's just a little bit too athletic, a little bit too willing to take some of these chances, right? A little bit too long, you know? I think that Means enjoys the reach advantage a lot of the time, and that might be a bit of a problem getting to somebody who's a little bit quicker, getting out in and out more, a guy who's long as well, right? I think Holland takes this one. I don't like any of the money on this one. And again, I don't. It's Holland is just a tough guy to get a fucking read on, right? It's hard to do. I always find that when I'm breaking down his fights, he gives me a lot of trouble just because he, it depends on what fucking Kevin Holland showing up and how much he's like, I don't know. sometimes he'll do spectacular things, and then sometimes I'm like, man, your takedown defense is, like, so, I don't know. You know, I don't know. It just depends. He's a guy who I watch fight sometimes, and I'm like, fuck, dude, you could go really far. And then you watch from another performances, and it's like, okay, that was kind of lackluster and not like, your takedown defense and stuff isn't where it needs to be to fight at that championship caliber. But this is a favorable matchup for him. Not that Tim Means can do a little bit of everything, and I think he's a highly underrated fighter. Highly underrated. But I just think that Kevin Holland is going to be better than him in pretty much every area in this fight. I think Kevin Holland is just like I said, I like when Joe Rogan's been saying this lately. You kind of got to judge people based on their highs and the best that you've seen them do. I think the best Kevin Holland that we've ever seen beats the best Tim Means that we have ever seen handily, right? So I think the favorite in this one is well-deserved. All right, next is a fight that was supposed to happen previously. I forget which card, but it got bumped to this one, and that's Donald Cerrone versus Joe Lauzon. And this is an interesting fight again, too, because you got, like, two veterans and stuff like that, right? Joe Lauzon's, like, 38 years old. But, guys, I know he came out and knocked, like, Jonathan Pierce out, and you're kind of, like, riding that high. But he lost three in a row before that to Stevie Ray, Clay Guida, and Chris Grootsemacher. And, guys, no offense, but, like, Grootsemacher's not that fucking good. And I felt like you really saw Lauzon fade in this fight. And I don't think Cowboy just gets tagged with stuff and stuff. But I really feel that Cowboy still starts to come on strong as fights progress. He starts finding his rhythm. And I think that unless Lauzon can catch Cowboy with something pretty early, stun him with something, maybe, I don't know. It's going to be very hard for Lauzon to win this fight. I think by the time the second, and I think that Lauzon also has a style where as long as like, Cowboy keeps his range, he should be able to start finding the timing on things earlier than he normally does. And I think he's just going to, man, I kind of think he's going to finish Lauzon. I kind of think he finishes him in like the second round, maybe the third. But I really feel that like as Cowboy starts coming on strong, he's just going to be overwhelming, especially in the kickboxing department, right? I think he has a lot of potential to knock Lauzon out. And I think Cowboy is just going to be like a little bit bigger and stronger, and Cowboy can grapple too, man. I just don't see. I'm probably betting just like standard like 2 units on Cowboy in this fight, right? I feel like that's. I just feel like he's going to win. I think he's like a minus 165 right now. And again, I'm not giving you the most technical analysis. It's just the way that I've seen Lauzon look as the fight starts to progress against a guy like Grootsemacher, right? I really feel like Cowboy takes this one, and I feel like he takes it pretty handily. I think he either gets a finish or just dominates from like mid-first round on. So we'll see. We'll see. But I really think that Lauzon's best chance is by catching him, and I don't like relying on that like ever. So anyway, moving on to our main event, about between Calvin Kattar and Josh Emmett. And this is an interesting one, guys, because, you know, Josh Emmett is – He's only done one main event before against Jeremy Stephens, got knocked out in the second round, right? But has really rebounded well since then. And he's coming off that big win over Dan Ige recently, right? And looked good, man. And he's a guy that you always have to worry about because he has a lot of power, right? But his boxing's very crisp. He can wrestle. He's riding a 4-fight win streak now, guys, right? So after the loss to Jeremy Stephens, knocked out Michael Johnston in the third round, knocked out Mirsad Bektik in the first round, beat up on Shane Burgos, and then beat Dan Ige most recently. So he's got an impressive win streak going on. But I just feel like in this fight right here, I think this is going to be a fucking war, right? Like, I really do. I think this is going to be a fight that goes back and forth. I think both guys are going to hurt each other. Both guys are going to have to battle through adversity if they want to win. But I feel like the advantage just goes to Kattar for me. Because Emmett is a guy who will, like, it's just that he relies a lot on throwing punches. And I think that no matter what, there's, like, the power, he's going to throw the power shots. And Kattar is just, like, it's not that he doesn't throw hard, but you got to see, like, how he can pace himself over 5 rounds against Giga Trikace. And how that power keeps coming, right? And he just stays, it's more just he stays crisp with his technique the entire time. And Emmett does headhunt a little bit, right? And he goes for that big shot, and it pays off sometimes, man. I mean, he can knock you the fuck out if he connects, and he could absolutely do that to Calvin Kattar. But I just think as the fight wears on, it'll be the volume and the reach advantage that Cater has, because he won't have to move as much. Like, Emmett is going to have to cut a lot of angles and throw a lot of big power, a lot of body shots, stuff like that, maybe mix in some takedowns against a guy like Cater. On the ground, though, I'll tell you what, Emmett might have an advantage on the ground. I know we saw Cater, like, work the takedown and stuff against Giga Chikache, but I felt like Giga Chikache's takedown defense was not that good, and he certainly didn't know what he was doing really from the back. And Cater, he had, like, a nice back take and stuff, but I don't think his jiu-jitsu's all that great. I don't think his wrestling's all that great, and I think Emmett is going to have an advantage in those areas. So it'll be interesting to see. But all in all, I think that Emmett has to cover a lot of ground to get to Cater, and Cater's just going to be sliding just out of range and boom, tagging Emmett with things. And it'll, I think over the course of the fight, it'll really start to wear on Emmett and tire him out, and Cater will be able to put it on. And I think he picks up a finish in like the fourth or fifth round here. But if Emmett can come out and just turn the fight gritty and make it happen at his pace, you might see things start to turn around a little bit, right? But I think he's got to find ways to get in close, maybe push this fight up against the cage once in a while. Right? Get in some dirty boxing exchanges, maybe do some like clinch work or like wrestling, some takedowns. It's got to be stuff like that. And using the fact that you're like shorter, denser, more powerful, he's going to be stronger than Cater. Using that to your advantage in the fight and putting in it positions where Cater's not going to get tired boxing you. Right? And if you tag, you might tag him with something. Yeah, you might, like, you might drop him. You have that power in your hands. You can definitely box, you can throw. But the safer route to victory feels like through a combination of the wrestling and the like body work and the in close when you can and being a little more conservative and trying to wear on Cater in that way. Because if you're just standing with them and looking to throw back and forth and look for those power shots, I feel like that advantage just starts to go to Cater. You know what I mean? So I like Cater in this fight. I kind of think that's how it plays out. I think Cater will be able to keep his distance and stuff. But Emmett's a big enough dog that it's worth throwing a little bit down on him. He's not completely out of this fight. I think he could definitely, like I said, impose his will on Cater a little bit. I just think he's going to have a little bit of trouble closing the distance to get to where he wants to be to make those things happen. And then he gets tired trying to do so and Cater starts putting it on. So I don't know. Cater by finish, I feel like, is a good one. But I think that if you want to hedge it or something or just bet on it outright, Emmett's not a terrible bet in this instance, right? I don't know. Anyway, that's all I got. Thank you guys for tuning in. I'm going to try to get a little bit better about – I can also just feel that I'm rusty when I make these, right? Like, I do these and I'll find myself, like, just, like, realizing that I'm not talking as smoothly. I can feel myself doing it right now. Right? And I guess it's like anything, you know, you don't use it or lose it or whatever. So anyway, thank you guys for tuning in. I appreciate it. Should be a good fight card this upcoming weekend. And yeah, I will catch you guys later. Thank you. Bye-bye.